red-green axis takes over American colleges. That is the topic we'll discuss today on the Christian Worldview radio program, where the mission is to sharpen the biblical worldview of Christians and to proclaim the good news of Jesus Christ. I'm David Wheaton, the host. The Christian Worldview is a nonprofit, listener-supported radio ministry. Thank you for your prayer, notes of encouragement, and financial support. You can connect with us by visiting our website, thechristianworldview.org, calling toll-free 1-888-646-2233, writing to Box 401, Excelsior, Minnesota 55331, or following our social media pages on Facebook or X. Hamas, an Islamic militant group bent on Israel's destruction, launches a surprise attack on October 7th from their territory in Gaza into southern Israel, butchering, in a most barbaric way, about 1,200 civilians and taking captive hundreds more. The Israeli military responds by invading Gaza to decimate Hamas and to bring home the captives. And so who do students and professors on campuses all over America rise up to side with? Israel, a democracy like ours? Not even close. They side with Hamas and the Palestinian cause to destroy Israel. Here's what that sounds like on the college campus.
Free Palestine!
Free! Free Palestine!
Stop bombing children now!
Stop bombing children now!
Hands off Rafa now!
Hands off Rafa now!
This is the red-green axis. The Reds, who are leftists, Marxists, communists, and the Greens, Islamists, share common cause in their hatred for the biblical God. The God of the Jews, and the God of Christians, the latter of which built Western civilization and the accompanying values of marriage, family, free speech in markets, and private property. It must be burned down, according to the red-green axis. And so they rage. And Psalm 2 says, "In God who sits in the heaven, he laughs." And he says, "But as for me, I have installed my king upon Zion, my holy mountain." Soren Kern, a Christian geopolitical analyst and writing fellow for Middle East Forum, joins us today on the Christian Worldview to explain what is going on in the Middle East and how it's related to Russia invading Ukraine and China flexing its muscles with Taiwan. We will also discuss the response, or lack thereof, by pastors and churches with regard to the situation in Israel. Soren, it's so good to have you back on the Christian Worldview radio program. You're coming to us from Spain today. Since we last had you on the program, the world continues to be in crisis, and this has really been raised quite a bit since Joe Biden took office in 2021. There are wars in the Middle East and in Europe, dominance by China, not just in the Far East, but really around the world now. The U.S. is declining in many ways. But let's focus first on the epicenter, the Middle East. What are some of the big picture dynamics going on there right now?
When you look at the Middle East, you can kind of see it as a chessboard, and there are many moving pieces, and each piece that moves impacts all the other pieces in one way or another. And so what we're seeing is just a lot of instability, even more instability than usual. And much of it is due, as you mentioned, to shifts in U.S. foreign policy. The Obama and Biden administrations, both of them, for some reason or another, want to make Iran the main hegemon in the Middle East. And so traditionally, the United States foreign policy is always focused on promoting Saudi Arabia and Israel, and to some extent Turkey, as the main American allies to mean some kind of semblance of stability in the Middle East. But for some reason, the Obama administration really changed that focus of American foreign policy to focus on Iran. I think there's a general perception among the Obama and the Biden people that if you can create a balance of power in the Middle East, in other words, if you can raise up Iran and Israel is already a nuclear power, they sort of have a balance of power that would basically maintain a certain sense of stability, and that the United States could abandon the Middle East and focus more on the Asia-Pacific region. Obviously, that's assuming that Iran is a rational actor, that Iran is playing by the same rule book that the United States and its allies do. Many of the people who are running foreign policy for Biden are the same people who were running foreign policy during the Obama administration. So I see this in many ways is a continuation of the Obama administration. And so they've really helped Iran and Hezbollah and Hamas and the Houthis in Yemen amass hundreds of billions of dollars to spend on terror, nuclear weapons. I would define Iran as one of the most destructive forces in global politics today. Its stated aims are to spread Islam across the world and to remove Israel from the map. In really decades of American impeachment, this even started with the Reagan administration when Iran-backed Hezbollah targeted the U.S. embassy in Lebanon in 1982 or 83, I believe it is. And the Reagan administration, instead of fighting back, just pulled all the American troops out and gave essentially Lebanon over to Iranian influence. It started many, many decades ago. What these appeasement policies have done now is allow Iran to really become a nuclear weapons threshold state. There are many different predictions or guesses about when Iran could go nuclear, whether it's within the next 6 months, whether it's within just a few days. I would say that the war with Hamas in Israel has really been a distraction from what's going on with the Iran nuclear program. The world is now focused on Gaza and it's not focused on Iranian nuclear weapons. And Iran is really barreling towards that nuclear weapons capability. During the Cold War, when the United States and the Soviet Union balanced each other out more or less in terms of nuclear weapons, both the Soviet Union and the United States were considered to be rational actors. Nobody would willingly begin a nuclear war because you can't win a nuclear war. The moment that one side launches a nuclear weapon against the other side retaliates and everybody ends up being destroyed. The problem really with Iran is that it's not really a rational actor. It's a radical Shia government. Its constitution is there to, it states that its whole purpose of the Islamic Republic of Iran is to spread Islam throughout the whole world. And what we saw during this recent barrage of missiles and cruise missiles and drones that Iran sent into Israel, just think if Iran would have had nuclear weapons during the barrage, what is preventing Iran from using nuclear weapons like it says it would? So I think this is really a big problem, and this affects everything else in the Middle East right now. If Iran were to acquire a nuclear weapons capability, and I believe, unfortunately, that it will sooner rather than later, it will have a domino effect in which Saudi Arabia has already said that it would try to purchase nuclear weapons, for example, from Pakistan. The Turks have said that they would go nuclear, and Egypt was as well. So we did have, within a very short period of time, is you'd have a lot of different Muslim states with nuclear weapons capabilities, and then you'd obviously have the Jewish state there as well. Many analysts now believe that the war in Israel was engineered by Iran to prevent the normalizations of relations between Israel and Saudi Arabia. I believe that to be the case because Iran wants Israel out of the Middle East. It wants to wipe it off the map. And if Saudi Arabia were to reach a normalization agreement with Israel, that means that Israel would be a permanent feature accepted by all the Sunni Muslim states as a permanent fixture of the Middle East. And so that's part of everything that's going on here is this larger war between Sunni and Shia Islam. Obviously, Iran is Shia and Saudi Arabia represents the Sunnis. It really all revolves around Iran and its potential to become a nuclear weapon state very soon.
Our guest today is Soren Kern. He's a geopolitical analyst. He's also a writing fellow for Middle East Forum. We have links to his writing at our website, thechristianworldview.org. I think it's confounding and confusing that the United States is accused and belittled for helping Israel and giving billions of dollars to the Jewish state. But then at the same time, the U.S. is giving billions of dollars to its enemies. Whether it's the Palestinians that ends up in the hands of Hamas or giving it directly to Iran. Can you get into the thinking of why the U.S. would think, or the leadership in the U.S. would think that giving billions of dollars in aid to Iran would be a helpful thing for the Middle East? Are they concerned that if they didn't give the billions of dollars to Iran that they've given over the years, that perhaps Russia and China would fill that void and they think they can manage it better if we give it to them? Just explain why this takes place, that we not only support Israel, but support Iran, who's a sworn enemy of Israel, want to wipe them off the map, and also call us the great Satan?
Sure, that's the big question of like why the Obama-Biden people want to remake the Middle East with Iran as the main hegemon. It does make very little sense in terms of geopolitics. It makes very little sense in terms of international relations theory. But these people are determined to push this through. And I'm afraid that they're succeeding. What the Israelis right now are trying to do is they're trying to prevent a multi-front war. Iran is behind everything that's going on in Yemen, behind what's going on with Hamas, behind what's going on with Hezbollah in southern Lebanon, northern Israel. Israel is trying to avoid having to fight all of these fronts at the same time. The Netanyahu government is under intense pressure from the Biden administration to stop all war, all hostilities before the November elections. I think that there's a fear that the far left of the Democratic Party are going to abandon the Biden administration for its pro-Israel stance. And so Biden's priority right now seems to be to remove Netanyahu and not Hamas. And so what we see is basically a total collapse of traditional U.S. foreign policy. I would say that the Secretary of State, Antony Blinken, and Jake Sullivan, the National Security Advisor, their number one objective right now is to de-escalate. They are worried about any sort of escalation of conflict ahead of the November elections. And so they are putting intense pressure on Israel to stand down. They're trying to appease Iran and all of the other Qatar and all these other states through money and through other financial and diplomatic incentives. As we speak right now, as recording this, there's a dispute between the Biden administration and the Israeli government about whether the Israelis should go into Rafah and finish off the war that they started, finish off Hamas. Prime Minister Netanyahu has repeatedly said that he has called for total victory. Total victory is a very important term because in the past, the Israelis have not pursued total victory. They've pursued partial victory. Bring Hamas down a notch and get some semblance of order back to the southern border. And every couple of years, there will be another flare-up. And after what happened on October 7, the Israeli government vowed for total victory. But right now, it's not completely clear if Netanyahu is still pursuing that. It's quite inconclusive. The other aspect of this is really is the International Criminal Court, the United Nations system. Everything right now is against Israel. It's quite astonishing how everything is sort of coalescing into pro-terror, anti-democracy defending itself. So I think the Netanyahu government is also very worried that international courts, particularly ICC, are going to declare the Israeli government, the cabinet, and the leading military figures in Israel as war criminals, which means they would no longer be able to leave Israeli territory or they would be arrested. It's quite a bad situation, I would say, for Israel. Now, if things will change in the election after the November election, I'm not sure if Biden then will believe that he can ignore the far left base and he can go back to, you know, the traditional Democratic policy of being pro-Israel. Or if President Trump wins, what will his position be on Israel? You know, President Trump did a lot for Israel, as we know, Jerusalem, moving the embassy to Jerusalem and pulling the United States out of the Iran nuclear deal. But President Trump, what people need to remember is that he's a deal maker and you get something and you give something. And I believe that had President Trump been reelected or had he been in the White House for a second term, he would have demanded a lot of concessions from the Israeli government as well, as part of the favors that he did to Netanyahu in his first term. So we really don't know at this point if there's really going to be any meaningful difference, whether it's another Biden term or whether it's another Trump term.
Soren Kern is our guest today, a geopolitical analyst and writing fellow for Middle East Forum. We're going to get to something he referenced there, this anti-Israel sentiment that is just sweeping over the globe. And we're seeing it here in America on our television screens with these uprisings on college campuses all over this country. We're going to get to that in a second. But just one quick follow-up question about the war in Israel. When you talked about this total victory, Israel is being accused of quote-unquote genocide. I mean, of course it's not genocide. Genocide is where there's a mass extermination of a people group. That's not taking place, but those who are anti-Israel use it for political effect. who are the ones dying in this war in Gaza of the Palestinians? Are they actually able to get Hamas, or there's a lot of collateral damage? Is it really possible to somehow surgically extract the radical Hamas element in Gaza? And then what's going to become of Gaza? Will it continue to be a Palestinian territory? Or what does Israel see as far as the future? Are they going to take over Gaza and annex it? What are your thoughts on that?
First of all, in terms of the numbers, it's not completely clear how many people have died. The Hamas numbers are obviously not reliable. So Hamas says some upwards of 30,000 people have died. The Israeli government says that at least 11,000 of those who have been killed are Hamas operatives, either leadership or soldiers. So it's not completely clear. It's obviously that there's a lot of civilian death and destruction. But I think we've been able to see the military has taken painstaking steps to try to reduce the number of civilian deaths. The challenge here really is that Hamas and Palestinian Islamic Jihad and some of these other Islamist groups that are in the Gaza Strip are hiding behind civilians, hiding in hospitals and in schools and in mosques. And it makes it very difficult for the Israeli military to pursue their objectives without harming civilians at some point. One of the big debates within the Israeli government right now is what to do with Gaza after this is all over. You know that the Israeli government was occupying the Gaza Strip, and they gave that over to the Palestinians in 2005, I believe it is. The objective of the Israelis right now is to wipe out the entire Hamas leadership, whether they're in Gaza or whether they're in Egypt or in Qatar or in Turkey, whether they're abroad. And the problem really is that Hamas is an ideology, Islamist ideology. The charter of Hamas calls for the destruction of Israel. And so again, it's based on Islam, as we were talking earlier. Islam itself plays a really big role in this because there's a general doctrine in Islam that once a territory has been Islamic, it's always Islamic. So at some point, the Muslims occupied what is now Israel, Palestine, and Gaza. According to their theology, that land has to be reconquered for Islam. We could say the same here in Spain, where I'm living. Spain was under Muslim occupation for many centuries. And the Islamic State and other Islamist groups like Al-Qaeda have always vowed that they are going to reconquer Spain for Islam. The question right now is, what do you do with the Gaza Strip after the Hamas leadership is eliminated? And I suspect that Israel is going to be an occupying power for quite some time. They will try to create a government out of more moderate elements within the Gaza elites, if that's possible. But I think that is going to be direct Israeli security responsibility for Gaza for a very long time. There's some talk about bringing the Palestinian Authority from the West Bank into ruling Gaza. I just don't see how that's going to happen because the Palestinian Authority is not really very much different from Hamas in terms of their long-term objectives. But right now, the big question, as I mentioned, is really, is Israel going to go for the total victory and eliminate the entire Hamas leadership and try to completely debilitate this organization? Or is it going to allow some elements to remain in Rafah, for example, in the city in the south of the Gaza Strip, from where they can rebuild this movement?
Our guest is Soren Kern, a geopolitical analyst and writing fellow for Middle East Forum. You can find links to his work at our website, thechristianworldview.org. While you're there, you can watch the recently posted video of our speaker series event with Alex Newman on the push for global governance. You can also look into the Overcomer course for young adults coming up in June, aged 18 to about 25, 27 years old at Stonehouse Farm in Jordan. Also, we just announced this week that registration is now open for the Overcomer Foundation Cup, our annual golf event in September. This year, it's going to be at Hazeltine National Golf Club in Chaska, Minnesota. We'll pause briefly to tell you about some ministry resources. Stay tuned. Much more coming up. I'm David Wheaton, and you are listening to the Christian Worldview Radio Program. David Wheaton here, host of The Christian Worldview, to tell you about the Overcomer course for young adults held June 21st and 22nd at beautiful Stonehouse Farm in Jordan, Minnesota. Age 18 to 25 is a highly transitional time. The convictions developed and the decisions made during this crucial stage sets one's course for years to come. In 8 sessions over 2 days, addressing life's most important issues such as God and the gospel, right thinking and living, relationships and marriage, vocation, the local church, and more, The Overcomer course is designed to help young adults gain clarity and conviction on God's plan and their purpose in it. There will be plenty of time for interaction and discussion as well. You can find out more and register by calling 1-888-646-2233 or by visiting thechristianworldview.org. Christians with discernment know that the U.S. public education system is humanistic to the core. That is because subversives have successfully removed from government schools the most important subject to understand truth and reality, God. While Americans were once educated at home or privately in an explicitly Christian way, today government schools are radically anti-Christian, propagandizing children with evolution, graphic sexual content, gender confusion, and globalism. Alex Newman's book, Indoctrinating Our Children to Death, is our new featured resource. It's soft cover, 276 pages, and retails for $17.99. You can order the book for a donation of any amount to The Christian Worldview. Go to thechristianworldview.org, call toll-free 1-888-646-2233, or write to Box 401, Excelsior, Minnesota 55331. Welcome back to The Christian Worldview. I'm David Wheaton. Be sure to visit our website, thechristianworldview.org, where you can subscribe to our free weekly email and annual print letter, order resources for adults and children, and support the ministry. Our topic today is how the red-green axis is taking over American colleges, and Soren Kern, geopolitical analyst and writing fellow for Middle East Forum, is our guest. Soren, let's move from a major war in the Middle East to a major war in Europe, where we're now over 2 years into this war with Russia in Ukraine. What are your thoughts on where this is going there? Because the U.S. continues to send billions of dollars of taxpayer money to Ukraine to help them defend themselves against Russia. I mean, think if we're sending a lot of money to help defend Israel, it's in the last bill, I think it was $20 billion or so, or give or take, to Israel, and something like $70 billion to Ukraine. So it's a huge amount more than they're sending to Israel. So billions of dollars are going there. There's accusations of corruption, of where that money's actually going, who's actually benefiting from that, accusations of money laundering going on. Wouldn't a settlement be better at this point for the U.S. to be encouraging that Russia doesn't want Ukraine to join NATO? That's ostensibly the reason that Russia invaded. For a major war going on in Europe, in a world of instant media, we see very little, if at all, video footage in war reporting from Ukraine, at least in our media. So what's going on there, and what do you think the future needs to be?
I think that the conflict in Israel and Ukraine and the potential conflict in Taiwan are very closely related. And they're really part of a coordinated challenge to the existing global order. And so I think that Russia and China, Iran and North Korea, they're considered to be revisionist states. They don't like the existing global distribution of power, and they want to upend it and create their own global order. In one sense, you could say that they are authoritarian states that view the existing liberal democratic order as a threat to their continued existence. I think that in this particular conflict, in these three, you can see that China's helping Russia, Russia's helping Iran against Israel, Iran is helping Russia and China with weapons and with oil shipments and drones. Iran is investing very heavily in Iran's infrastructure, in Russia. That's really what this is all about. It's really about the future of the American world order. It's sometimes called Pax Americana. The United States needs to prevent Russia from occupying any part of Ukraine, or this whole order begins to break down, because once Russia is successful in Ukraine, it will feel emboldened to go after the Eastern European state. Russia is not a normal country. It's an imperialist power. And President Putin has said many times that he wants to make Russia great again. It's just really about great power politics. This is really about polarity. Polarity is really the distribution of power in the international system. And during the Cold War period, it was relatively stable because you had two more or less equal powers, Russia and the Soviet Union, in terms of nuclear power, military power. Directly after the end of the Cold War, we were in a unipolar situation where the United States was the dominant power. And we're now very rapidly moving into a multipolar system where you have multiple powers, China, Russia, United States, I guess you could say the European Union, and to some extent, if Iran goes nuclear, it would be Iran. You know, it's moving towards multipolarity, and multipolarity is the most unstable system possible in the distribution of international power. So we're finding ourselves right now in a situation that is very similar to what it was in 1938, before the beginning of World War II. You can say that Israel, Ukraine, and Taiwan are harbingers for the future of Pax Americana. It's the American peace. It's a system that's been in place since the end of the Second World War. And if the U.S. and particularly its allies in Europe and Asia fail to defend these countries, this whole American-led alliance system is going to begin to unravel. And my view is essentially is a world in which the United States no longer acts as the global policeman will very rapidly descend into anarchy. So I really view the Russian-Ukraine conflict through the lens of the global system, and that if Russia wins the war in Ukraine, Eastern Europe will be next. Russia poses a threat to peace in Europe, and it must be stopped. Most of the money that the Congress allocates for Ukraine goes to the U.S. military industry. It's for producing weapons in the United States. They don't just send a check for $30 billion to Kiev, the government of Kiev. It's for producing weapons that employ Americans and that keep American factories open, particularly the weapons factories. If you follow Twitter, which I do quite a bit, there's an extraordinary amount of footage of the Ukrainian conflict, from battles, from the fronts on various parts of the Ukraine conflict, from what's going on in the major cities in Ukraine to sort of revenge attacks, I guess you could say, from the Ukraine against positions in Russia. So there is a lot of information out there if you know where to look for it and if you're interested in finding it.
And so, Soren, just explain a bit more how China is related to what's going on with Russia and Ukraine.
I think that China is observing very closely what the United States and NATO allies are going to do to protect Ukraine. Are they going to allow Russia to occupy that country? Are they going to move to some kind of a negotiated settlement? And I think that China perceives that if the West is weak vis-a-vis Ukraine, that that's going to give China a green light to move on to Taiwan. I think that Chinese occupation of Taiwan would be a disaster for the existing world order, for the global economy, for the free movement of goods through the sea lanes of communication in Southeast Asia. I think that what we're seeing right now with the closure of the Red Sea to the Houthi rebels in Yemen is a warning of what will happen if China is allowed to invade Taiwan. If you look at a map and you try to see what is the geopolitical reality, it's called the First Island Chain. It's a network of American alliances that stretch all the way from Japan to Taiwan to the Philippines. And it sort of prevents China from becoming a global power. It keeps China inside a certain territorial limit. And if China were to invade and occupy Taiwan, that would really be the unraveling of the entire Pacific alliance system that the United States has built up. And one by one, Korea, Japan, Philippines, and the rest would really be in China's orbit.
The only hope, unless to end this then, is that the U.S. has to continue to support Ukraine until Russia sort of gives up on Ukraine, because Russia was predicted their economy is going to collapse and everything else. None of that's happened in Russia with this war. They have a very different perspective than Americans. They're willing to stay there, it seems, indefinitely until they achieve what they want. And unless the U.S. military and American soldiers get directly involved, Ukraine is, we're just going to keep on sending them arms and weapons until what? Russia has staying power that they're right next door. This is on the other side of the world to America. So what's going to break the Russian will to stop their objectives in Ukraine?
Yeah, well, the Europeans have to step up. This recent bill for providing aid for Ukraine is probably going to be the last one. I don't think the Trump administration is going to be spending that kind of money on Ukraine. And I think it's a wake-up call here in Europe on all the capitals that Ukraine is now Europe's problem. And Europe needs to stand up because the United States is increasingly focused on either the Middle East or particularly the challenge coming from China. So I think that if the Europeans stand up and do what they should be doing, particularly the Germans and the French, that would at least show President Putin that he has no chance of winning definitively. And I would also say that the Russian economy is in a shambles. And the only reason why it's continuing the way it is because countries like Iran and China are helping Russia to avoid sanctions. And they're buying all of the oil and gas that the Europeans used to buy from Russia is now going to China. And that's propping up the Russian economy. I don't see how much longer this can go. Maybe it can go on for another decade. Who knows? But as I said, this conflict with Ukraine is really definitive for the future of peace and security in Europe.
Soren Kearns, our guest today here on the Christian Worldview, a geopolitical analyst and writing fellow for Middle East Forum. Soren, the protests, the uprisings, the intimidation, the anti-Israel sentiment, Jewish sentiment, anti-Americanism that is taking place, not just at Columbia University in New York, but all over the country. It's happening here at the University of Minnesota, where we're based in the United States. These protests are against Israel. They're against America. So they're for the Islamic militants like Hamas in the Palestinian areas. Jews are being blocked from going to classes at these schools. In-person classes have been canceled, I think, at Columbia and maybe even other places. There's these encampments springing up on school property, the desecration of property, Palestinian flag flying on these campuses. And when they try to put up an American flag, there's resistance to that. These uprisings that the protesters are wearing masks all the time, as if they're criminals, basically, not showing their faces. A building at Columbia University was taken over in New York. Even off campuses, roads are being blocked from people being able to drive and so forth. Very little pushback by schools or the police, just the police, I think, for the first time went into Columbia just a couple days ago. And then the funding from people like George Soros, anti-American elements like that, that certain protesters or agitators are being paid to come onto these campuses and cause problems. The coordination level, that these little green tents are popping up all over the country. I mean, where they all go to the same store and buy them? I'm just going to play a compilation clip of the kinds of things that are going on campuses around the country for Hamas, Gaza, Palestinians, and against Israel. The first part of the clip is of a Jewish student trying to go to class at UCLA.
You guys have closed the entrance. We are UCLA students. I have my ID right here. I'm being blocked off, not by the security guard, but by you two. You three. Oh, look, they're making their burger while I'm going this way. Excuse me. This is what they do. I'm a UCLA student. I deserve to go here. We pay tuition. This is our school. And they're not letting me walk in. My class is over there. I want to use that entrance. Well, I can't take it. Will you let me go in? This could be over in a second. Just let me and my friends go in to class.
We're not engaging with that.
Then you can move. Will you move?
Let's go. Another human chain.
Get someone wrap around. Get inside the military.
Why can we not go through here?
Because we're not letting media in right now.
I know, but this is a public campus. Why are we not able to go through?
Because we're not letting media in right now. There's
I know,
an
but
encampment
who,
going on.
Who are you? Are you a
Can
police
officer? Can you take
officer?
A step back, please?
No,
even the firefighter just said to please step back.
Well, I mean, he's a
please
firefighter. He's not a police officer. What's
you're
the
not
problem?
A firefighter, so you're not coming in.
Well, why am I not allowed to come in there?
Because we're not letting media in right now.
Please I know. Well, what are you afraid of? Why do you not want to have people talk to you and find out what your protest is all about?
Genocide! Stop! Stop!
Liberators acting in solidarity with Palestine continue to hold themselves to a higher standard than Columbia. Taking back our own campus is the only and last response to an institution that obeys neither its own so-called rules nor ethical mandates, which is why we began the Gaza Solidarity Encampment.
Soren, how do you explain these protests taking place on U.S. college campuses? And is there anything like this going on to this degree in Europe?
There are several factors that are converging at the same time. And these protests are obviously not spontaneous. I would break this down into multiple levels. And so obviously the first one is really cultural Marxism. This is really made inroads in the American higher education system. And we've talked about this. You've had other guests on your program talking about critical theory and intersectionality. And it basically breaks everything down into the oppressed and the oppressors. And so in this situation, Palestinians are the oppressed and the Israelis are the oppressors. And so it's just black and white. Jews are now, according to these sort of critical theories, that Jews are viewed as privileged whites and oppressors. Israel is branded as settler colonialism and oppression of the indigenous people. So basically, this is very ideological driven. It really makes no sense. It's not even possible to really debate with these people or argue with them in a rational way. And this is just a feature of American higher education and the general corruption of American society. Another factor really is the outside funding of universities. And so my focus is always on the non-Americans who are funding this. I'm sure there are people within the United States who are funding this. But basically, countries like Qatar, Saudi Arabia, the United Arab Emirates, Kuwait, and many others have donated tens of billions of dollars to American universities to influence the Middle Eastern Studies Department. And most elite universities, I would say the ones that really produce the future leaders who run the American government, they're taught educational system that is very anti-Israel, very pro-Arab, and very pro-Palestinian. And so I'll just give you an anecdote from my own personal experience. I attended Georgetown University. I went to the School of Foreign Service there, which is one of the main institutions for training American and foreign diplomats. And this was 30 years ago. When I got there, I couldn't believe the amount of pro-Palestinian, anti-Israel animus in the basic courses. And so I ended up having to change my major from Middle Eastern Studies to International Relations degree because I really couldn't continue along this line. But most of the people who are now managing universities, most of the people who are in the State Department, many people who are in the Pentagon and the think tank world, they've all come through this American university system. Even abroad, many of the elites in Europe went to schools like Georgetown or Princeton or Columbia or Harvard, and they've really taken the same sort of anti-Israel worldview and taken it back to their own countries. In addition to that, really, and this is what this is really about, apart from the cultural Marxism about the funding, is really that this is spiritual war. And obviously, this anti-Semitism is satanic. It's coming from the pit of hell. The Bible really says that this anti-Semitism is, in a way, a sign that we are nearing the end times. So we shouldn't really be surprised that we're seeing this. God chose the Jews as his people. And that's what the Bible says. That's what we believe. And Satan hates that. And he has been doing everything for thousands of years to undermine the Jews and undermine the Jewish state.
I'm glad you brought that up because it is beyond explainable by just saying, well, these students in these universities are taking the side of the oppressed, the Palestinians against the oppressor Israel and the Jews. There is the anti-Jewish sentiment, hatred of that thread that has run through history, inspired by Satan against the people God chose in the Old Testament through whom our Messiah would come. And so that's really the only way to explain this, how virulent these protests are and how just irrational they are against a tiny little country in the Middle East, the only democracy in the Middle East, historic friend of America. That leads well into the last couple questions for you, Soren, about the support that Christians are called, that in scripture, those who bless Abraham, bless the Jews, will be blessed, and those who curse them will be cursed. But before we get further into that, let's pause briefly to tell listeners about some ministry resources. But after the break, more coming up with Soren Kern about how Christians in churches should be supporting Israel and the Jews. I'm David Wheaton, and you are listening to the Christian Worldview Radio Program. Christians with discernment know that the U.S. public education system is humanistic to the core. That is because subversives have successfully removed from government schools the most important subject to understand truth and reality, God. While Americans were once educated at home or privately in an explicitly Christian way, today government schools are radically anti-Christian, propagandizing children with evolution, graphic sexual content, gender confusion, and globalism. Alex Newman's book, Indoctrinating Our Children to Death, is our new featured resource. It's soft cover, 276 pages, and retails for $17.99. You can order the book for a donation of any amount to The Christian Worldview. Go to thechristianworldview.org, call toll-free 1-888-646-2233, or write to Box 401, Excelsior, Minnesota 55331. David Wheaton here, host of The Christian Worldview, to tell you about the Overcomer Course for young adults held June 21st and 22nd at beautiful Stonehouse Farm in Jordan, Minnesota. Age 18 to 25 is a highly transitional time. The convictions developed and the decisions made during this crucial stage sets one's course for years to come. In 8 sessions over 2 days, addressing life's most important issues such as God and the gospel, right thinking and living, relationships and marriage, vocation, the local church, and more, the Overcomer Course is designed to help young adults gain clarity and conviction on God's plan and their purpose in it. There will be plenty of time for interaction and discussion as well. You can find out more and register by calling 1-888-646-2233 or by visiting thechristianworldview.org. Welcome back to The Christian Worldview. I'm David Wheaton. Be sure to visit our website, thechristianworldview.org, where you can subscribe to our free weekly email and annual print letter, order resources for adults and children, and support the ministry. Our topic today is how the red-green axis is taking over American colleges, and Soren Kern, geopolitical analyst and writing fellow for Middle East Forum, is our guest. Soren, Israel is quite a bit like America, democratically, politically, of course, but also from an evil side, immorally. They have the same strong advocacy for what God has established as wicked, such as the LGBTQ movement. Generally speaking, they are living in rebellion against God and certainly have rejected God's Messiah, Jesus Christ, for them and for the world. And yet, we're still called to bless Israel. What does that mean practically for Christians to be a blessing to the Jews in Israel, and yet without overlooking their just egregious defiance of God and the Savior, Jesus Christ?
That's a very complicated situation. The Jews are obviously do not believe that Jesus is their Messiah, and that's really the whole reason, according to the Bible, for their expulsion from Israel after the temple was destroyed in 70 and after final expulsion in 135 AD. I would not say that the Jews don't believe in God, because there are a lot of Jews who are very godly people and they love God. They just don't recognize that Jesus was their Messiah. And so Paul tells us in the book of Romans that part of it is that they're blinded. The Lord has blinded them, so they're not able. There's a very large messianic Jewish movement in Israel. There are thousands, maybe millions of Jews in the United States and the West who've converted to Christianity. It's very clear from Ezekiel, if you take the whole 37, 38, 39, when you talk about the dry bones, the Lord has brought these people back from all of the corners of the earth, but they're without a spirit. And at some point, God is going to breathe spirit into them. And so they're in the land right now in unbelief. And God will work on them to bring them into belief, obviously. So I think that as Christians, we should support Israel because, as you mentioned, they're God's chosen people. It's very clear from Genesis 12, verse 3, that the Lord says that he'll bless those who bless the descendants of Abraham, and he'll curse those who curse them. So we definitely want to be on the right side of that equation. And Zechariah 2, verse 8 also describes Israel as the apple of God's eye. So it's something that's very, very important to God. I think if you go further down into Zechariah 12, verse 3, the Bible teaches that Jerusalem will be a heavy stone, that all the nations of the earth will be gathered against it. So God will bring judgment against all of the nations who have come against Israel. So all this anti-Semitism, all this thing with Islam, all of the injustices that we see will be made right, obviously, in the millennial kingdom at the very end. But we're in a process. Christians need to support Israel. We need to pray for the peace of Jerusalem. We need to trust in God's sovereignty. And I wouldn't be personally too judgmental against the Jews in Israel. I think basically the Lord has got everything under control. And in his perfect timing, as the Apostle Paul says, all Israel will be saved.
Soren Kern with us today on the Christian Worldview. Just one final question for you, Soren, just to follow up to that, that what you just described, I believe is biblically correct about the call for Christians to support Israel and the Jews, even despite the fact that they're living in rebellion against God right now. Figuring out how to do that is key. We don't want to affirm anyone in their sin, and yet we must support them. So that needs to be thought through, certainly in ways that support their right to an existence in their land. That will be an obvious way to support them. But what you just said about supporting the Jewish people is not discussed very much that I see in evangelical churches in this country. Even Christians who are theologically conservative, who would be in our doctrinal ballpark, say little to nothing, or even are against Israel, more of the Reformed camp, I would say. You mentioned social media, and you'll see this online, that they just don't think, why would you support this little country? They're in rebellion against God. There's not future significance for them. Obviously, they believe the church has now replaced Israel and so forth. But what do you make of that, Soren, that there are theologically conservative Christians who just don't want really anything to do with Israel? And secondly, that even amongst those churches or Christians would believe in a pre-tribulational rapture, let's say, or the premillennial return of Christ, and that there is a purpose for the Jewish people, as Revelation clearly describes, and also in Romans it describes as well, in Romans 9 through 11. These churches and pastors, there's not much that I see talking about what is going on in Israel, at least even to inform congregations about what is taking place and to encourage them to do, just as you said, pray for them, pray for their support, pray that God's will be done, that sort of thing.
Deuteronomy 32, verses 8 and 9, very clearly states, literally, that Israel is God's allotted heritage. God chose the Jews for whatever reason. These are covenants that God made with the Jews that are eternal. They're not contingent on, you know, the ancient Israelites' obedience to those covenants or not. They're eternal. So the promises that God made to Abraham are eternal. And so I think that there's a lot of bad theology within the Christian church today. It started really with Augustine and all of the spiritualizing and allegorizing of the promises that God made to Israel, beginning to teach that the true Israel is now the church. This just obviously, it's bad theology. The problem is we're in the situation now where we have almost 2,000 years of bad theology. And if people would just read the book, the Bible, if they would just read the text in a literal hermeneutical, grammatical hermeneutic, they could very easily see that the Bible says what it says. And it's like, there can be no doubt. So what we have in the United States, I think, in the evangelical church is a lot of people are putting their theological system in front of the text of the Bible, and they're interpreting the text through their theological system. And that leads, obviously, to a faulty conclusion. A lot of pastors who are very good Bible expositors, for some reason, when they come to prophecy and come to Israel, they all of a sudden move from a literal interpretation to an allegorical interpretation, as if that shouldn't be consistent. And so I think that is really one of the major problems within evangelical Christianity today, that pastors themselves don't know how to deal with eschatology, and they don't know how to deal with all these conflicting theologies about Israel and the church and the separation of these two entities and God's plan for them. And I think the tragic thing really is that many Christian pastors in America have no idea where we are on God's redemptive timeline, because all the things that we've talked about today in this interview show very clearly that we're moving in the end times. These are all signs over and over and over again. It's like the Lord is showing us over and over and over again that the end is near. And yet, so many people in the church in America, and I suppose here in Europe as well, have no idea that God is about to make a big move. and about to turn his attention back to the Jewish people and to redeem these people. So I think it's really tragedy. I don't know if it's because of the wealth, the comfort in America that pastors don't want to touch theologically controversial issues for fear of losing members or losing offerings or being chided by their theological brothers and sisters in the pastorates. But in the end, the Bible says what it is, says, and you know, I would take it literally, we should. In the end, it's all under God's control.
It certainly is, and that's why we appreciate you so much, Soren, that you can take these complicated geopolitical movements, dynamics going on in the world, and simplify it to make it understandable and how it's all connected in a world that is going against God, basically, that wants to get to a point of what Revelation describes with one world government or a global governance dynamic with a world ruler and how it's set against Israel. But then you bring in the fact that God is sovereign. He's ordained this. This is always bringing the end of history where his son is going to return to reign. And we just so appreciate your reminding us of that good news. Soren, we thank you for coming on the Christian Worldview today. Once again, as always, all of God's best and grace to you and your family. Again, you can find out more about Soren Kern at our website, thechristianworldview.org. Scripture gives us the model for how to intercede for Israel and the Jews, even in the midst of their rebellion against God and rejection of Christ. We don't have time right now, but go to Exodus 32 and read what Moses said, or Romans chapter 9 and read what the Apostle Paul said as they interceded for God's chosen people, to remember his covenant promises for the Jews in praying for their salvation and supporting them in their struggle to live in the land that God gave them. And when you oppose Israel and the Jews, do you know whose side you're taking? Satan's. He's been trying to exterminate God's people going back to Esther and Haman and continues to this day, even on U.S. college campuses. Pastors need to step up and pray for Israel and the Jews and their services and inform people about what the Bible says about the Jews and Israel and what God has planned for the future. God isn't losing right now, by the way. God never loses anything. He is working every situation that looks dire. Israel, Russia, Ukraine, China, American political leadership, immorality. He's gathering the world against himself and his people until his own son, Jesus Christ, returns to judge and to reign. Thank you for joining us today on the Christian Worldview and for your support of this nonprofit radio ministry. Let's remember that Jesus Christ and his word are the same yesterday and today and forever. Until next time, think biblically, live accordingly, and stand firm. The mission of the Christian Worldview is to sharpen the biblical worldview of Christians and to proclaim the good news of Jesus Christ. We hope today's broadcast encouraged you toward that end. To hear a replay of today's program, order a transcript, or find out what must I do to be saved, go to thechristianworldview.org or call toll-free 1-888-646-2233. The Christian Worldview is a listener-supported nonprofit radio ministry furnished by the Overcomer Foundation. To make a donation, become a Christian Worldview partner, order resources, subscribe to our free newsletter, or contact us, visit thechristianworldview.org, call 1-888-646-2233, or write to Box 401, Excelsior, Minnesota 55331. That's Box 401, Excelsior, Minnesota 55331. Thanks for listening to The Christian Worldview.